We'll go on to case number three, which is appeal number 02-1500, Indiana Insurance versus PANA, Community Unit, School Unit 8. Good morning, Mr. Slutsky.
Good morning, Judge Rilder, Judge Barr, Judge Williams. This case arises out of a fire which occurred on October 4th, 1997. The Pana Junior High School burned. The claim was made for insurance. Insurance coverage was denied for the south portion of the junior high school. This appeal hinges not on a single word, but on a single numerical digit. That's what this case was about. It excludes coverage, it is argued, and an entire piece of property without something more.
Well, tell me this. What does PANA think a zero on the statement of values should mean?
The zero on the statement of values is superfluous. The statement of values one entire piece of property, and that's the junior high school. It's pure surplusage that there's a zero there next to the south portion of the junior high school.
It has to do with value, doesn't it?
Yep.
Zero.
Sir.
Well, if it has no value, why are we replacing it?
It does have a value. There is a value. The north portion of the building encompasses the.
But everybody has agreed that it has no value.
That is, I don't believe that is agreed at all. To the contrary, it is not agreed. In fact,
prior to the new administration, there's no question it wasn't covered then, is there?
Prior to 1995, when Superintendent Marsh became superintendent,
right.
A policy decision was made by the then administration and board not to insure that portion of the property.
Why?
That was just a policy decision. They had a limited budget. They didn't want to spend the money on it.
Because it had no value.
To the contrary, the trial court in Indiana Insurance maligned the value of the south portion of the junior high school. It does have a value. It was an intrinsic part of the north portion of the building.
What would be the rationale behind permitting monetary recovery on a blanket coverage policy for an item with a stated value of zero? I mean, wouldn't that impair the insurer's ability to predict and adjust for risk? Should the insurer just ignore it totally? And how does the insurer know it's supposed to be superfluous?
Good question. The answer is you must look at how this was purchased. And a public entity has a mandatory duty to publicly bid insurance coverage. And you have to look at the bid specifications and ask, what did the school district ask for? And if you look at the bid specifications, the 1996 bid specifications, there's nothing in there that excludes coverage for the south portion of the junior high school.
So was a premium paid for?
In 1997, a premium was paid for that portion of the building, yes.
Not broken out, though?
No.
Just one premium?
One premium because there's only one building. It's the junior high school.
I need to ask you a factual question because it confused me throughout the brief. Both of the parties have recited the total square footage of the two schools at 54,526 square feet. But if you actually add everything up, it's 60,730 square feet.
The number 54,526, I believe, arises from the Gatewood Hance architectural drawings. If not that, then the general underwriting information which is contained in the specifications upon which the insurer had to submit its bid.
We just need to know which it really is. Is it 54,526 or 60,730?
It is my understanding that the entire junior high school is, that's including the north and south portions, is 54,526 square feet.
Okay, I'm going to ask you the same question, so maybe when you get up you can. Why did PANA seek coverage for the South Building in 1996 when it hadn't sought coverage for the South Building before that time?
The answer is we had a new administration. Larry Marks is the superintendent. He comes in. He looks at the manner of risk management. He says, I don't like what's being done. He makes a recommendation that all the buildings be appraised. They appraise all the buildings and the contents of the buildings, and they purchase, pursuant to 1996 bid specifications, insurance for all the property of the district.
Can you explain how a mistake that you argue justifies reformation in this case can be attributed to Indiana?
The answer is the 1996 bid specifications require blanket coverage of all the property. The answer of the Indiana Insurance Company the complaint filed by Indiana Insurance Company states that they supplied coverage based upon not the 1996 bid specification, but the 1992 bid specification, and that's of critical importance. And it's of critical importance because in 1992, there's a specific page, MP2A. It said explicitly, we do not want coverage for the south portion of the junior high school. In the 1996 bid specifications, that language is not there. There is nothing telling anybody to not insure that building. And you must look at the bid specifications objectively. What would other insurers, how would they have considered those specifications when they were submitting their bid?
How would other insurers have looked at the zero?
They would have looked at the general instructions of coverage, which identifies the junior high school as at 54,526 square feet, and said there's only one junior high school. And they would have objectively concluded that the south portion's value of zero was included in the north portion, and that valuation was the entire value of the building.
Then why didn't PAN object to the demolition and debris removal coverage?
It didn't know it had it. It didn't know it had it until after the fire.
Well,
it didn't ask for it.
Well, somebody had read that contract.
That's why we had a broker. But the answer to the question, the important point is, the providing of blanket strike bid, the importance of having demolition and debris removal is a admission, in essence, that the insurer, Indiana Insurance Company, was merely renewing the policy from 1992. They were relying on the 1992 specifications. What was supplied in 1996 and 1997 was based on the 1992 specifications, not on the 1996 specifications. And that, objectively, is how an insurer should have looked at it. That's why it had to be reformed. Everybody agrees, there's no contest about this, that insurance was to be provided pursuant to the 1996 bid specifications, and there's nothing in the 1996 bid specifications which excludes coverage for the south portion of the junior high school.
Well, you say the insurance people who are making a bid would be on sound ground if they assumed that there was no value to the building that we're talking about prior to the new superintendent. That is when they asked for bids and then solicit value zero, that they would be justified in assuming there was no value to it.
Only in conjunction with the 1992 bid specifications, which state on page MP2A, we do not want coverage for that building.
Because it has a zero value.
No, because we've told you.
Yeah, I know, but doesn't it say zero?
But what the specifications say is to provide coverage unless otherwise noted. What
right.
does noted mean? Zero, a single digit, is not a note. Webster says a note is a concise or brief explanation. A zero is not a brief explanation. It is a single digit. It doesn't mean anything.
What did it say before the zero? What did the zero relate to?
South portion of the junior high school on the statement of values.
Value.
But
statement of value.
But let's look at
zero.
That's what the statement of value says, but then we have to go back and look at what the declaration says. The declaration says,
we don't want it.
No, the declaration says, which was issued by the insurer, any property listed on the statement of values is covered by the blanket. Any property listed on the statement of values is covered under the blanket. Remember what this court said.
Its value, however, is also covered by the state. The statement is zero. That wasn't their idea, it was yours.
But there's one piece of property, and that's a junior high school. And it includes both the north and the south portion of the building. This court has said in Citizens First National Bank that an exclusion from coverage may occur only when the exclusionary clause is clear and free from doubt.
So then why didn't it just say the high school? Why was there even any mention of the south or the north? If they're supposed to interpret it, if they're supposed to look at the zero, look at the other clause that you mentioned and know that, you know, it's included. I mean, why even have the north and south?
Judge Williams, it's the burden of the insurer to establish by clear and unequivocal language that it is excluding coverage from any property on a statement of value without a value. Without that language, it's an ambiguity. There's a question. From our perspective, we believe the declaration says every piece of property listed on the statement of value is insured under the blankets. If there's an ambiguity, we've got to look at the totality of the circumstances, and if we apply that test, we've got to go back to the 1996 bid specifications. Does MP2A exist in the 1996 bid specifications, excluding coverage? The answer is no. The clear implication is all property listed on the statement of value shall be covered. What should the insurer have done to exclude coverage under the policy? They should have stated, like the statement of values does, the specifications, that it is excluding the south portion of the junior high school. Or it should have said that a property which is listed on the statement of value without a value is not covered by the blanket. I want to go to the issue of Allendale. The trial court relies on Allendale for its decision. The Allendale case establishes that an endorsement which specifically included sublimits on blanket coverage, and in this case the Cecilin France Electronics Warehouse, was not included within the blanket and was subject to a sublimit. Let me clarify that. It was included in the blanket, but there was a sublimit on the warehouse. In that case, the warehouse was on a scheduled listing of property, which clearly established that there were sublimits. Sublimits are not an issue in this case. Here, the insurer did not expressly place any sublimits on the blanket. Here, the insurer's policy did not provide an endorsement defining how property is to be listed on the statement of value. Here, the insurer did not have an explicit exclusion which limited coverage properties to those properties listed on the statement of value with an established value. Here, the declaration stated that the properties listed on the statement of value are covered by the blanket without any limitation whatsoever. Here, denial of coverage is the issue, not sublimits of liability. The court's reliance on Allendale and the court below is wrong. Now, how did other people interpret that zero? Well, the senior underwriter for Indiana Insurance, who had 19 years of experience underwriting, had never seen a statement of value with a listing of zero. Deb Callen, who had been an insurance industry consultant since 1976, had never seen a zero on the statement of value. A single digit should not be the basis for excluding coverage. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Schoonmaker? Good morning.
A significant portion of Pena's argument is premised upon the assertion that there is no specific policy exclusion contained in a policy which excludes the South Building from coverage. And with all due respect to Pena, Your Honors, I don't believe this case is about specific policy exclusions. The threshold issue presented by this case is that of whether the South Building was ever insured. We don't get to the issue of specific exclusions to covered losses, such as a fire loss, until we address the issue of whether the South Building was ever, in fact, insured by this policy. And indeed, the policy itself is instructive on this issue. If I may, Your Honors, I would direct your attention to the primary building and personal property coverage form, which forms a part of the policy, which is endorsement CP00101091. That endorsement specifically sets forth the nature of the coverage provided for the buildings within the Painted School District, and it specifically says, we will pay for direct physical loss of or damage to covered property at the premises described in the declarations caused by or resulting from any covered cause of loss. Covered property is then defined as, if covered property is used in this coverage part, means the following types of property for which a limit of insurance is shown in the declaration. And that's the very important language, Your Honors, for this reason. If we look, this particular endorsement makes reference to the declaration page. The declaration page clearly states that the policy and the blanket coverage provided for the buildings is subject to the statement of values, which is incorporated by reference into the policy. That statement of values was prepared by Pena. Pena had a duty to submit that statement of values and a duty to accurately state the replacement cost of every building that they wish to insure under the blanket coverage. Consistently, going back to at least 1981, Pena had treated those two buildings separately for purposes of insurance. And they had consistently stated the value of the building at zero. And judges, you aptly point out, the reason for that is the age and condition of this building. This building had been condemned by the state of Illinois for use as an active school building because of
numerous... I hope it was Indiana.
Pardon?
I hope it was the state of Indiana.
It was the state of Illinois.
Oh, I'm sorry. What am I saying?
Department of Education had condemned the building because of numerous life and safety code violations which existed. The building was essentially being used for storage at the time of the fire.
Indiana didn't like it either.
Going back to the policy, the crucial thing here is that the blanket limit is subject to an aggregate limit of $19 million. The way this policy was constructed was that Debbie Jenkins, the commercial underwriter, looked at the statement of values which Pena had submitted, totaled the replacement cost for each building, which was set forth in the statement of values, including the north building, and then calculated a premium based upon the aggregate blanket limit.
Now, of course, the 1996 bid specifications didn't specify any coverage for demolition and debris removal, yet Indiana included coverage for demolition.
That's correct, Judge. And that was clearly stated on the face of the declaration page that $50,000 in demolition and debris removal would be included for the building described as Building 1, Premises 1, which Ms. Jenkins said was a clear reference to the South Building. But let me address that further. Ms. Jenkins testified was that, contrary to Pena's position, she did, in fact, thoroughly review the 1996 bid specification, but she, including the statement of values which listed the value of the South Building at zero. But she also looked at the preceding year's policy. There was a long-standing relationship between these two parties, including the preceding year, 1995, in which Pena concedes they did not purchase blanket coverage for the South Building and designated the value as zero to convey that intent. So Ms. Jenkins, when she saw the zero, simply inferred that since they were stating a zero for the South Building, that they wished to continue with $50,000 in demolition and debris removal coverage in the event the building was destroyed. Because there was clearly no intent to rebuild this building in the event it was destroyed. And in fact, they never did rebuild this building. But clearly, the policy itself requires that a particular building be subject to a limit of insurance. And since no replacement cost value was assigned to this building did not form a part of the aggregate limit of $19 million applicable to the blanket coverage. And therefore, it is not subject to a limit of insurance, and therefore it is not covered by this policy. Your Honor, if I may address, I just want to wish the testimony from Ms. Jenkins is clear and unequivocal. This building was never rated when she was preparing a response to the 1996 bid specifications. There was no premium calculated for this building because of the statement of a replacement cost of zero, and there was no premium charged to Pana for any coverage for this building beyond the $50,000 in demolition debris removal coverage. One of the basic tenets of contract interpretation is the attempt to determine the intent of the parties to the contract, in this case, the policy of insurance between the parties. In other words, what did Pana intend when they prepared the 1996 bid specifications? And what did Indiana intend when they issued the policy? But there's a third question here as well, and that is, what did Pana convey, or did Pana convey its intent to Indiana through the 1996 bid specifications? Pana has repeatedly insisted, and that's treated as a fait accompli, the fact that the 1996 bid specifications requested blanket coverage for the South Building. Unfortunately, that issue is not so clear as Pana would have you believe, Your Honors. That assertion, treating this issue as a fait accompli, in other words, stating that the 1996 bid specifications unequivocally sought blanket coverage, flies in the face of several important facts in the record, not the least of which is the testimony of their own insurance consultant, Renee Smith. Ms. Smith testified at the time she was actually initially charged with the responsibility of preparing the 1996 bid specifications. And what she said was that she engaged in a conversation with the then superintendent, Larry Marsh, during which Mr. Marsh indicated to her that he would like the South Building covered. She then began working on the 1996 bid specifications and has clearly testified that in order to convey that intent clearly to Indiana, she intended to make several substantial changes to the 1996 bid specifications, including, Your Honor, eliminating the reference to both the North and South buildings. She intended to combine the two onto one line and recalculate an aggregate value for both buildings. Now, unfortunately, due to a change in ownership at the insurance consultant, IMB, and co-defendants indicate, those tasks were never accomplished. The computers were shut down and those changes were never formulated and never put into the 1996 bid specifications, and therefore, they were never conveyed to Indiana. So I submit to you that even assuming that Pana did at that point intend to alter or modify the insurance coverage provided by this policy, that intent was never conveyed to Indiana. Judge, to address your issue, you asked some questions about the square footage of these buildings.
Yep.
There are several different pieces of evidence in the record. There are architectural drawings, there are measurements, there are several appraisals that were prepared. I guess the best answer to that question is our best estimate is, in fact, the building is closer to 54,000 square feet than 60,000 square feet. Now, some of the confusion on that issue comes with the appraisals that were prepared by ValueQuest, which was an appraisal company commissioned by Pana to look at the buildings, and then later by Gatewood Hanson.
Right, ValueQuest says 25,000, you say 35,000.
Gatewood Hanson also said 35,000. And what I would submit to you is the North building itself is actually closer to 30,000 to 35,000. So it appeared to me, and the evidence supports at least ValueQuest appraised the North building only. And that's why Mr. Marsh, in theory, went back to the architect and said, I want you to appraise both buildings. The reality is that Gatewood Hance probably went out and appraised the North building, which was the active school building, and that's why their appraisal reflects 35,000 square feet, which is precisely the square footage of the North building. So it appears to me that actually both ValueQuest and Gatewood Hance actually appraised just the North building, and that those competing appraisals relate solely to the North building. One inference being that then neither ValueQuest nor Gatewood Hance looked at the South building because there was no intent to purchase insurance on that building. The other issue I would point Your Honors to is the fact that the 1996 bid specifications seek ordinance and law coverage solely for the North Building, not the South Building. And that's important for two reasons. Ordinance and law coverage is an endorsement, an optional endorsement, which a school district such as Pana can purchase to cover the additional costs attendant to rebuilding a building to bring it up to modern building and safety codes. Pana specifically elected not to purchase or to solicit a bid for ordinance and law coverage on the South Building. And the reason for that is it's consistent with the entire insurance history on this building. dating back to at least 1981, they never carried any specific coverage on the south building beyond the $50,000 in demolition and debris removal. And the reason they did not seek ordinance and law coverage on the south building is because they had no intention of rebuilding it in the event it was burned. To rebuild that building, to bring it up to modern life and safety codes, would require exorbitant amounts of money, and they had no intention of doing that, which again is consistent with the long-standing history of this building and the long-standing insurance history whereby Pana was not seeking blanket coverage for the building. And I'd also draw your attention to the statements of value which have been discussed in this case. Consistently, from 1991 through 1995, and during that period, there is no doubt, Pana concedes that it did not purchase blanket coverage during the period from 1992 through 1995. In 1996, there had been no substantive changes in either the condition or the use of that building. And therefore, there would be no compelling reason at that time to seek blanket coverage. And in fact, the North Building was insured for roughly between $3.1 and $3.2 million during the periods from 1991 through 1995. The South Building was stated with a replacement cost of zero throughout that entire period of time. Ironically, in 1996, the year in which Pana now says that they intended to purchase blanket coverage for the South Building, they dropped the stated value or replacement cost value of the North Building to $1.6 million. And again, submit a statement of values with a zero value for the South Building. I would submit to Your Honor that what Pana would have you believe is that they actually intended to substantially or dramatically increase the total coverage available to the junior high school building by now bringing the South Building within blanket. The reality of what they did is they actually dropped the replacement cost value of the North Building by 50% and continued to submit a zero value for the South Building. So I guess the rhetorical, how is it possible for Pana to state that their intent was to increase coverage, but in reality they dropped the stated value of the North Building by 50% in 1996? Again, in 1997, at the time of the ruling, they returned the value to $3.4 million, which is essentially consistent with what they stated as the value of just the North Building in 1995. So again, that clearly manifests their intention of seeking coverage solely for the North Building, Your Honors. If in fact, Pana has now submitted a claim for $4.5 million for the South Building alone, Your Honors. If in fact they intended to seek blanket coverage for the South Building, the statement of values in 1996 and 1997 should have actually reflected a total replacement cost of both buildings in the range of $8 million, not $3.4 million. Pena's counsel in argument said the zero was superfluous. One of Your Honors asked a question as to what the zero meant, and Mr. Slutsky indicated he felt the zero was superfluous. Well, it's not superfluous because the statement of values has a very precise purpose and a precise meaning. If you look at a statement of values, it has a description of each building to be insured. And in the right-hand column at the top, it says replacement cost. Pena has the obligation and duty of submitting a statement of values which clearly and accurately states the replacement cost of each building they wish to insure. And the reason for that is so that Indiana or any insurance company can accurately rate the buildings, compute the aggregate blanket limits, and calculate a fair premium for the coverage to be provided for those buildings. The simple fact is that Indiana never assumed the risk of offering replacement course coverage for the South Building of the junior high school. The zero was not superfluous. And that's why the buildings were listed on separate lines, North Building, South Building. Pana makes reference to the Public Bidding Act in Illinois. Again, I would stress, Your Honors, that I think there's a conceptual misunderstanding as to what that argument is premised upon. Pana has never alleged that Indiana violated the Public Act. And again, Indiana's position is that it did fully comply with the Act, followed the bid specification, and issued the policy that Pana was requesting. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Schumacher, very much. Thank you. Mr. Tlucky, how many minutes?
It is 24 seconds.
Thank you.
The junior high school has value. It provided ingress and egress to the building. It provided an elevator to the building. It provided storage, heat, electrical, water. There was storage in the building, and there was a shop in that portion of the building. It was an integral part of the South building. It was not a vacant, abandoned building. It had value. The bid specs. Not in violation of the bid specs. To the contrary, the insurer had a...
Hadn't that building been condemned?
Condemned, Your Honor, those are the words used, but that's not what it means. What it means is...
Condemned doesn't mean condemned?
No, it doesn't. It means it's not available for use.
Humpty Dumpty ought to be here. He missed a chance.
Well, let's...
Words mean only what you mean?
Well, that was the Judge Mills' characterization of it. What it means is...
Wait, Judge Mills picked the word himself, condemned. It was not used by the state of Illinois?
What the state of Illinois said was that that property could not be used for student purposes.
It was condemned for use as a school?
It could not be used for student purposes because...
Well, what? It can't be used for school.
For school, for educational purposes, for student use.
Well, that's what
school
is.
For other purposes.
Well, like what? Storage?
For custodians, for offices. The issue is for school purposes or student purposes.
You mean... An office is in a conjunction with a school is not being used for school purposes?
There's a distinction between administrative offices and student...
Where does that show?
In the life safety code, Your Honor.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Thank you very much, Mr. Slutsky, and thank you, Mr. Schumacher.
Thank you, Your Honor.
We'll take the case under advisement. And thanks to both of you.